there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, 196, Persona Non Grata, Part 2. Read by Mitchell Tu. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, what would you do if you did not have the rights to use your identity? You've been all over the net recently. Ads, interviews with big names, and wow, the sponsors. They're major corporations. I'm blown away. Raphael enthusiastically noted between mouthfuls of mango avocado salad. I remember you were intense and focused. You videoed everything. But this? There are references to your channel all over the web. I like the new format, too. Guess that's why it took you so long. You needed to get the style right. Drop that aw shucks DIY sensibility for something more polished, right? Lauren growled under her breath, trying to keep her disgust hidden. She hadn't talked to Raphael in years. They had grown up in the same working-class neighborhood and attended the same secondary schools, but had nothing other than that in common. If circumstances had been different, reconnecting with him would have been at the bottom of her list. Yet, he was the only person she knew who had become a lawyer, and quite a good one at that. I must admit, I was a bit surprised to hear from you, Lauren, Raphael noted. But it's great to see you. When did the windfall start? You must be doing pretty good now. It's not a windfall, Raphael. I don't receive a penny from any of that stuff. This may be hard to believe, but those interviews and ads aren't me. They're some kind of deep fake a company called Janus Media International is making. Raphael put his fork down and stopped eating. Nothing at all? She appeared to have caught his interest. No, nothing. And you said that Janus faked the videos. That's not you in them? Makes sense. They're a big jump in professionalism from where you were. He smirked. How did they post them to your channel? If they hacked your account, the video platform should be able to shut them down.
They took over my account through an IP infringement claim, Lauren reluctantly admitted. They're saying they own the copyright to my face and voice.
And do they?
I'd never be stupid enough to sign away the rights to my identity, Lauren insisted.
At least not that you remember, right? Maybe there was a time, like a party or something?
Raphael, I'm not like that, and I'm not that stupid.
Lauren was beginning to think the meeting was going to be a waste of time. Okay, I get it, Lauren. I had to ask. Look, copyrights aren't my area, but I can recommend someone.
The upscale decor of the office made Lauren all the more anxious. The place looked like an illustration from Architectural Digest. Tastefully chosen artwork accented the Danish modern furniture. All originals from the last century, all expensive. She wondered what that implied about the hourly rates. Despite the legal secretary's insistence they were interested in her case because of the precedents involved, cut off from her source of modest income, Lauren couldn't help but be concerned.
Miss Dabrowski!
A well-dressed man who looked younger than Lauren asked.
Yes?
We're ready for you if you'll come this way, please.
He motioned her down a hall as wide as her apartment's living room to a large set of frosted glass doors etched with the firm's logo. The young man pushed them open to reveal a large meeting room dominated by a boardroom table, empty except for a dark-haired woman with a formidable presence, which made Lauren instinctively want to turn and leave. The woman, who had been consulting a tablet, got up and offered her a hand.
Welcome, Lauren. I'm Margot Swanberg, a senior partner here at Kapoor & Partners. Please, sit down.
Her handshake was gentle but confident. However, when Lauren went to pull away, the woman held on.
When Raphael told us about your case, we were fascinated. This is new territory, Ms. Dabrowski. It could be precedent-setting.
Lauren glanced warily at the Eames-inspired chair's kitty corner to Margot.
Before we start, I need to say that I don't have a lot of money. I know that may seem crazy, but you get a lot less from ad revenue than people think, and the platform's cut is substantial.
We know that, Lauren. Don't worry. We're more interested in the new legal territory your situation may be setting than the fees.
I thought it was cut and dry. That's what Raphael in the video platform said.
Lauren pointed out, beginning to relax.
Not really. We did some preliminary background research. Janus Media acquired the rights to your visual and auditory identity as part of a package of similar rights they purchased from a patent-holding company, which in turn bought them as part of a liquidation auction. The original rights owner was a private robotics company called Medi Robotics. Does that jog any memories?
Lauren shook her head.
The company was about 5 years old when its assets were sold off. That was about 12 years ago. They never managed to get a product to market. Medi Robotics was started by a billionaire who later passed away. The family closed down the Blue Sky projects their mother had invested in, like Medi Robotics, which were mining out the family fortune. It was trying to develop human-like robots to assist older people with mobility issues. Their value proposition was the unique human appearance of each robot, which would not be computer-generated but use the faces and voices of real people.
Margot paused to look at a message on her tablet.
Interesting, but what does that have to do with me?
Lauren asked, hesitantly, already suspecting the answer.
Medi Robotics owned the rights to your face and voice.
Margot tapped something on her tablet, then pushed the device over to Lauren. Reluctantly, she grabbed it, turned the device around, and read the paragraph, noting the familiar scrawling signature highlighted in yellow. Arthur Dabrowski.
My father?
Lauren checked the date. She would have been 7 years old when he signed the document.
But you can't sell an identity, can you?
Initially, that's what we thought too,
Margot confirmed.
By international convention, every person on the planet has a right to their personal identity. It's a human right. But if you dig deeper, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights only preserves the biological and philosophical elements of human life. And Article 8 of the European Court of Human Rights interprets personal identity as the right to a private life which protects unwanted intrusion. But none of this prevents visual or audible identity from being copyrighted and sold.
Really? There's got to be some law somewhere.
Possibly, but in this country, there is nothing which specifically prohibits it. That's what makes your case so interesting. We don't know yet how many identities Medi Robotics bought, or even if they are the only company which acquired them. Their intellectual property assets, including identity rights, were packaged up, then bought and sold many times. The problem is the paragraph I've highlighted for you. It was either badly written or intentionally vague, which makes the rights potentially very broad, more than the original company would have needed. They include all forms of media on and offline. We think this is, well, maybe an intrusion into Article 8. But fighting it will take a major effort, and we may not win. Are you up for this? I'm curious, why is your online persona Lauren Nimitz instead of Dabrowski?
Nimitz was my mother's maiden name. She died when I was 9.
The rideshare accelerated away, leaving Lauren feeling stranded, angry, and apprehensive as she approached her father's house. The place was in a once prosperous car-dependent suburb, but now, Pinnacle Estates was a forgotten hinterland of invasive weeds cracked concrete, and faded vinyl siding. Even after the city started to contract and people on the edges either left for the country or moved closer in, Oscar, her father, had refused to move, claiming he wasn't ready to abandon his independence and memories for a subsidized 55-plus condo in the center of town. Which, in turn, meant Lauren didn't get out to see her father that much, and, limited to the vagaries of current public transit options, he was seldom able to get in to meet her. So, they had only seen each other sporadically since she had moved out. Lauren navigated carefully up the path to the front door. Years ago, her father had broken out the concrete sidewalk and driveway, converting the rubble into a DIY stone fence and the liberated ground into a vegetable garden. The garden was the only green spot in the bay, the only green she had seen since entering the community. How many people were still living here, she wondered. A lot of the houses looked abandoned. The door opened before she got halfway to the house.
Ren!
Her father enthusiastically greeted with a nickname only her parents used.
Come in, come in! It's so great to see you. I started watching your online channel. I turn the sound off and leave the picture on while I do chores. It makes me feel like you're close by.
Oscar offered a hug, but Lauren resisted.
I'm not here for a family reunion, Dad.
Confused, he backed away, then ushered her in. The house hadn't changed since Lauren left. It felt like a decaying time capsule, full of 30-year-old bargain basement furniture designed to last 5. The only compensation to the passage of time were the wall screens in each room. One was frozen on a frame, showing her interviewing Rayanish Varma, a hot, independent Indian film director. She had never met the man, let alone interview him. The image poured gasoline on her rage.
Can you turn that off? She growled.
You're doing so well now, her father started to say.
Then, noticing her irritation, picked up a remote and turned the screen off. Lauren picked the recliner near the door and fell into it, raising a small cloud of polyester dust. It had been her mother's favorite chair and obviously never used. Oscar took the couch across from her.
Can I get you anything? Tea? Coffee?
No.
Lauren took a second to compose herself. Her impulse was to immediately lash out, but she knew that wouldn't help.
Thanks, Dad. But I don't need anything. Help yourself.
He stayed put and looked at her quizzically.
Dad, do you remember signing this?
Lauren reached over and handed him her tablet. He squinted, then put on his reading glasses.
It would have been about 17 years ago.
Oscar examined the image on the screen, then put Lauren's tablet down, took off his glasses, and sighed.
There was a lot going on back then, Lauren. I don't know how much you remember. Your mother had been diagnosed with cancer, and the insurance company refused to cover her treatments because of her family history. We burnt through our savings first, then remortgaged the house to pay for her medical bills. Thankfully, it was worth something then, but your mother wasn't responding to conventional treatments. One doctor suggested an experimental drug which was getting positive responses, but we didn't have the money. I saw an article online about a startup robotics company who was willing to buy the rights to people's faces to use on their robots. So I contacted them. We offered them your mother's and mine, but it turned out they were only interested in yours.
Oscar leaned forward and rested his head in his hands, then sighed.
They paid $127,000. The robotics company told us it wouldn't be a problem for you. The faces and voices they were buying were going to be used to humanize automated assistants in long-term care facilities, so they'd never be seen out in the general public. That's why we never told you. They went under before they made their first robot. I thought that was the end of it. How did you get this?
Oscar's explanation doused the fire in Lauren. She remembered how money had always been a problem, especially after her mother had passed away. Now, looking around the house she grew up in, the dilapidated furniture, the old clothes her father never replaced, and the fact he never moved away, it made sense why he had signed.
Are you still in debt, Dad?
It hadn't occurred to her before to ask. He shook his head.
I'm still getting enough programming contracts to keep the roof over my head. Tell me how you found out.
Lauren decided it was pointless to confront him. There was nothing to be gained by a confrontation.
I just wanted you to know that the current videos of me you're seeing online aren't me. They're fakes being made by a media company.
Oscar nodded thoughtfully.
I'm sorry, Lauren. I really am. If I had known, I wouldn't have...
Lauren and Margot met in the lobby of Janus Media's head office. It hadn't been hard to discover the Upstart Media channel was created by one of the big internet giants as a way to diversify its business. The building was a hollowed-out Chicago-style warehouse, lavishly reinvigorated as a mashup of early 20th century industrial, infested with 21st century tech.
How'd the meeting go with your father?
Margot asked as they headed to one of the glass elevators, which crawled up the side of an 8-story atrium recently carved into the 120-year-old structure.
He feels bad, but I understand why he signed. He didn't know how broad the agreement was. It's all water under the bridge now, isn't it? As long as he signed the affidavit that he wasn't informed about the possibility of the rights being sold, it is. He didn't know,
Lauren confirmed, and passed an envelope to Margot. They got out on the 8th floor and were shown to a conference room with an exposed brick wall punctuated by large, arched ceiling-to-floor windows, which had been dimmed so the sunlight entering the room was soft and warm. An aide seated them and offered them something to drink. It all felt precisely choreographed to make Janus seem approachable. However, they strategically kept Lauren and Margot waiting long enough to say, "You're not our top concern," before a casually dressed man in his late 20s appeared, accompanied by two middle-aged professionals in business suits.
Lauren, Margot, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm Carl Button, Janus Media's chief business officer.
The man introduced himself, then shook both of their hands before shifting to the opposite side of a glass conference table.
This is Michael Goodman and Rachel Shields. They're Janus Media's legal counsel.
The two nodded, then took a seat on either side of Carl.
I know we're all busy, and I want to keep this brief, so I'll get right to the point. As you know, we've recently acquired the exclusive rights to Ms. Dabrowski's visual and oral identity as part of an intellectual rights package originally assembled by Medi Robotics. I want to remind you this was all done in accordance with current laws. Our legal counsel,
Carl acknowledged the lawyers seated on either side of him,
carefully researched and vetted the validity of the assets before we bought them. However, you're claiming Ms. Dabrowski's father didn't know what he was signing, and the original contract overreached the International Convention on Human Rights to protect individuality.
Yes, Margot interrupted. And we have an affidavit from my client's father. He was under duress at the time and was not informed the rights to his daughter's identity could be transferred to another owner.
She confidently placed the envelope with the affidavit on the table. Carl stared at it for a moment, then smiled.
Your case will take years to litigate, and in the meantime, you will not be able to get an injunction against our use of Ms. Dabrowski's identity, which again, I must remind you until proven otherwise, was acquired by Janus in good faith. And in the spirit of fairness, I want to put something on the table. which we have no legal obligation to do. But first, I want you to understand our business model. Janus' parent company has developed a proprietary generative adversarial network, years beyond its competitors. Let me unpack what this means. GAN is a machine learning system using generative and discriminative AIs. To put this simply, one program creates artificial data and the other tries to prove it's fake and feeds the results back to the first, until the synthetic and the real data are indistinguishable. Janus is using this tech to create fully synthetic media channels with selected proprietary identities, one of which is Ms. Dabrowski's.
But why? Lauren asked.
Good question. Entertainment and advertising is a very competitive and expensive business. Janus Media's differentiator is our ability to instantly generate original on-demand content. Once our system is fully functional, it will create programming and advertising for virtually nothing, targeted to each individual online viewer. Our testing shows audiences can't tell the difference between synthetic and real content. We don't want bad PR, so we are willing to put a deal on the table here. Say, 3% of profits from media using your face and voice, and we'll also license back your face for personal use, such as driver's licenses and passport photos, with the proviso that if you are recognized, you won't reveal our agreement. It's a good deal, Ms. Dabrowski. Remember, we are not obligated to offer you anything.
Lauren shook her head.
No!
Think about it. The plastic surgery necessary to ensure you're not infringing on our IP won't be cheap.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. If you want to hear more great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by World on Fire, a new podcast from CBC Edmonton. World on Fire is a new, five-part series that takes you to the front lines of out-of-control wildfires in Canada, Australia, and California. Recorded during the COVID-19 pandemic, hosts Adrian Lamb and Mike Flanagan look at what it takes to find hope in the midst of fear and destruction, and how communities affected by wildfires rebuild. The series examines the high costs that wildfires cause to people's health, homes, and communities. Find World on Fire on the CBC Listening app or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at cbc.ca/worldonfire. This episode is also brought to you by Park Power, a provider of electricity and natural gas in Alberta that offers low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. In Alberta, you get to choose who to buy your energy from. Park Power has low overhead, and chances are you'll save money if you switch. You can find out how much money you would save by visiting parkpower.ca and plugging your numbers into the Alberta Energy Savings Calculator. If you decide to switch, it's easy. Nothing changes about your service, only the price you pay. Learn more at parkpower.ca. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Audio post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. To find out more about David, head over to davidhume.me. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.